welcome to Safe Space, the ABA podcast. My name is Michelle Zeman, and I'll be your host for this evening. Be sure to listen for those two code words throughout tonight's podcast, so that way you can get your free CEUs. I'm really excited to talk about all things supervision tonight with my guest. Her name is Rossi Perez. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to talk about supervision and everything that has to do with supervision and ABA.
Me too. I am so excited to talk about it. It's such a highly necessary area that we have to really continue talking about and learning about and just getting better at, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Man. Oh, man. Well, first, tell us about how you got into ABA. What sort of got you here?
Yeah, so I was introduced to vocational services first. I worked at the Department of Rehabilitation, and I helped diverse individuals to find a job. So I actually helped them with like applying to jobs, interviewing skills, what to wear in an interview, and then kind of helping them out maintain their job. So I was actually like a job coach, and I would go in there and, you know, support them in their jobs and try to find solutions or accommodations as needed. And then from there, I was like, you know what, I need more hours. Like, how can I get more hours? And then that's when I was introduced to early intervention as a behavioral therapist. So I was super blown away by like how much of an impact and a difference I can make in someone's life. I didn't realize like how much of like a difference I can make, honestly. And I fell in love with like early intervention and vocational services as well, and you know, middle age too. Like, I love everything that has to do with ABA, and I was like, I need to pursue my master's in this. And that's how I kind of grew from behavioral therapist to being a mid-tier supervisor and then a BCBA, and here I am as an independent awesome. BCBA now.
That is so awesome, you know, and it's so great to see your passion evolve basically from, you know, doing vocational services to going into ABA. And as you know, as a behavior therapist, you have to be supervised by, you know, your supervisor, who would be a BCBA mid-tier, you know. I know every state works differently. I know in Florida, it's you have to be supervised as like you have to be an RBT, and you can be supervised by a BCABA, but yeah. BCBA supervises. It's like a mid-tier system. So kind of going into the realm of supervision, tell us your journey about becoming a BCBA and how supervision sort of like played out for you during that time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an oldie, so I think things look a little bit different now. but basically for me is I was able to step into different companies so that I was exposed to different supervision, and that made a really huge difference. And I didn't realize that it would make such a big difference in the way that I would become a BCBA, honestly, like how much of an effect that would play in me becoming, you know, the best that I can be, right? And so basically all of my field work, I did remain with one company, but I also had, before I remained in one company, I was actually in different multiple companies, because hours, like the struggle to get hours was real. So I was actually exposed to, you know, morning hours to being in school setting, and then from the school setting going into the clinic setting, and then from the clinic setting going into the home setting. So I was actually exposed to all three, which was nice to be exposed when you're, you know, accruing those field work hours. And also just kind of like providing me with the insights of what that looks like too, so that once I become a supervisor, I was, you know, be able to provide quality services to my clients. So that was basically my biggest, like how everything went down, to be honest.
That is so cool. You know, you were able to get a variety of experience, work with a variety of clients. And I feel like, you know, kind of from the perspective of a BCBA, you know, it's really important to get that exposure while you're being, you know, while you're in your coursework, you know?
Yes. It's, I think it makes a big difference, just to kind of get all that exposure. But I know sometimes we're not lucky enough to get that exposure until later on, and that's okay too. Like, I think something that, you know, something that it kind of stuck with me, was that even as a BCBA, I still wanted to be exposed and grow and gain knowledge as much as possible. So even as a BCBA, I was actually changing from one company to another company. And a lot of people might stigmatize that, like, Rosie, you can maintain like a job like for more than a year with one company. But honestly, it made me grow into the clinician I am today. So I'm actually thankful that I did jump from one company to another, because one company could do certain things one way, but then another company can expose you on how you can do things differently too. So I was very like appreciative that I was able to gain that exposure and knowledge.
I definitely agree, you know, when it comes to, you know, bouncing between different companies. I know there's some stigma behind, well, you know, you're just doing a company bounce and you're not being loyal. But at the same time, it's like, don't you want to be able to grow, you know, like,
yes.
You know,
yes. And at least for me, like, I'm very knowledge hungry. So it's kind of like, oh, you're doing this. Like, I actually want to be a part of that. And then I go in there and I start learning. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh my goodness. So I can only imagine, like, you know, the impact that it had on you was definitely so like great. And I'm curious to know, kind of like from your perspective, you know, how important do you believe it is for aspiring BCBAs to receive supervision from multiple supervisors rather than just one supervisor for your entire field work hours?
Yeah, I definitely, I push for that exposure, to be honest, because the more supervisors that supervise you during your field work hours, the more that you will learn to know what basically is going to work for you as a clinician at the end of the day. Because you can learn so many things from one clinician, but you can learn so many other great things from another clinician. And so, like, for those that are like, you know, I know there's some companies that are very nice and invest in the supervision, you know, fieldwork experience. Yeah. That's awesome. But I definitely encourage them to like seek out remote supervision too, because there's so many other clinicians, like great clinicians, that are offering remote supervision, and that provide you with more insights and just a different perspective, right? Like, I feel like that's a big thing too, is just providing that difference in perspective of how you can do certain things. And I feel like that at the end of the day is just, it makes a big difference. So
it really does. I mean, even talking from like a fieldwork supervisor perspective here, I don't know it all, you know, like as far as, you know, some of the things that have like come out over the years, I don't know everything that's involved in some of the, like the newer stuff. I know more of like the older stuff, but then I'm also knowledgeable in other areas and I have a different background from other supervisors. So I think It's quite a beautiful thing to be able to kind of get like all of your knowledge into like a melting pot between different supervisors. And I think sometimes even like supervisors forget, in my opinion, just based on like my experience, that the technicians and anybody who wants to grow into becoming a supervisor needs to have that exposure, so that way they can grow that much more, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so on that too, like, what have you noticed between some of the companies that you've worked at in terms of supervision and in terms of training styles? What has like being in that position been like for you?
It's really eye-opening, I would say. And it also taught me to just continue to be humble, right? Like you mentioned, right? Like, we don't know everything, no matter how great of a clinician you are, right? Like, there's always something new to learn, or there's always something that you can learn from someone else. And that's something that I always, like, at least I try to kind of expose that to my supervisees as well, in regards to, or whoever I mentor, honestly, to keep yourself humble, because at the end of the day, like, if you receive some sort of feedback, is so that you can continue to grow and learn. And like I mentioned, like, I could say, like, I had some goods and some bads, right? And all of it honestly contributed to, you know, becoming something that I wanted to be at the end of the day. And I knew that at the end of the day, like, I wanted to provide quality services. And so I would say just be humble, listen to other perspectives. Every BCBA has something to contribute in some way, you know, like, someone can be very book smart, for example, right? And like, they know, like, ins and outs of like ABA strategies, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't even think of that, you know. Or somebody could be very creative of how to implement goals naturally, for example, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't even think of that. Thank you for your knowledge, you know. So there's just different ways and perspectives, and I truly, truly appreciate, like, every company I've worked with, every mentor, every supervisor I've had, no matter the good or the bad, I'm just very appreciative of everyone, because at the end of the day, I learned from each and everyone's experience, and it just made me grow into the clinician I wanted to be, which is, you know, provide quality in my services.
And that's really the most important part, is to be able to still provide the quality services as a BCBA to the client that you're serving, but at the same time, also provide that quality supervision, you know, because at the end of the day, you're there for the client, but you're also there to help your technician, help them grow and help them be able to gain more experience, while at the same time, you know, being able to still get other perspectives. I feel like, you know, even as a BCBA, I've been a BCBA since 2016, to give you an idea. And I've had good, not so good people that I've come in contact with, but at the same time, kind of like learning throughout my experience, you know, it's kind of amazing to see what other people have to say and kind of like what other people have learned, you know, it's really such a beautiful thing.
Exactly. Yes. I couldn't agree more, because at the end of the day, like, I think the more that you can expose yourself, the better it is, to be honest. Yeah.
It really is. And, you know, again, like, you know, you mentioned, like, some people are really knowledgeable in one area and other people might be in another. And I think that, you know, for all of you who are BCBA candidates, BCABA candidates, you know, don't settle on just one supervisor. Like, that would be my advice personally.
Yeah.
You know, and that being said, you know, listen to other people's perspectives, kind of see what that's like, you know, kind of like what you were saying, Rossi, you know, it's okay to get more exposure and it's okay to learn from other people, you know?
Absolutely. No, I definitely agree. And that's another thing too. Like, I think I've bumped across other BCBAs where, like, they spent most of their time with one company. Like, they're like, oh, I've been in this company for like 5 years. So I'm like, oh wow, that's great. Like, your loyalty, like, awesome, you know? But then I realized, like, they only know whatever that company provided. So it's funny, because like, I have a friend that always describes it as like, I was living in a box. Like, now that I'm like in another company or like exposing myself, like, I realized, like, there's so many other different ways of approaching certain things. And I'm like, yeah, like, it's a beautiful world out there. Like, go out there and like expose yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like, you know, there's, again, just so much stigma between hopping around. And I even kind of set a stigma on myself, sort of like incidentally, of, oh man, I haven't, like, just to give you an idea, the last few years I have bounced between companies, and it's like, oh boy, you know, at what point do I need to say, okay, maybe I need to like pump the brakes a little bit when it comes to the company, you know? And so I've been there, and that's actually, it's kind of interesting. It's both helped me learn more, but at the same time, and I'm curious to know from your perspective, has it ever attributed or contributed to any like burnout at all?
In regards to like bouncing from company, yes. And also because like you have to learn the way they do things in one company too, right? Like once you move over, like like, even though it's similar, right, the things that they do can be very different. And the deadlines, or like the way you communicate, or emails, or like how to stay organized, like everything is very different. And so you have to like relearn everything, like how that company works sometimes. And it did lead to burnout. For me, it was just like, I keep switching. Like, yes, like I've gained so much knowledge during my journey, but I'm tired. Like, I'm tired of like going from one company to the next company to the next company too. And I'm also tired of like, I was very burned out in the fact that I felt like at one point I wasn't really providing the quality that I wanted, whether it was with supervision or with my services. And I felt like there was like something missing there. And that's what led me to become independent, because I felt like my passion, like everything that I, the reason why I love this field came back when I became independent, and doing what I love to do, which is either providing some sort of mentorship or providing remote supervision or providing one-to-one services. Because once you become a BCBA, it's really hard for you to do one-to-one services. Like, I don't think there's very many opportunities for that once you're a BCBA, because most of the time you're supervising and training, right? And so the fact that I was able to go back and do that and, you know, take it back down and, you know, play with my kiddos again, because I love playing with my kiddos. Are you kidding me? Like, play is awesome. I love to blow bubbles with you. So it's just kind of like, those are the things that I feel like just kind of make a big difference at the end of the day. And I realized that once there was like, there's a point in time where you're just like, okay, I feel like I've bounced enough from one company to the next. And I feel like I've, you know, exposed myself enough from other supervisors that now I want to share that information with other people that are aspiring to become a BCBA. And so that's what kind of led me to where I'm at now.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting too, because you mentioned becoming an independent BCBA, and some people might not completely know what it means to be an independent BCBA. So do you mind talking a little bit about what that's like?
Yeah, that means like you're your own boss pretty much, right? Like, you get to do what you are good at doing, right? So I know that for me, my strengths were providing some sort of mentorship, right? Providing supervision, because I love to expose other people of everything that I've learned in my journey, right? And so I want to provide the most information that I can so that the next person that is going to become a BCBA, they're well prepared, right? As much as possible, as much as we can get them, right? And so I knew that that was my passion, like that was my niche. But at the same time, like, I wanted to continue to do parent training and one-to-one. And so being independent just kind of means that you get to do what you feel most passionate about and grow it from there, right? So like, I have grown my own business, right? So as an independent BCBA, you have your own business, you grow where like what you feel like you are most passionate in. And so I've grown to the point where I provide remote supervision, and I also provide private services to clients, as well as providing private school consultations as well. So I do a little bit of everything, because I think I'm just a person that likes to just kind of help in every way, in any way that I can, honestly. And so I just love what I'm doing now. And so I don't feel that burnout as I used to anymore. Like, I feel like my passion is right back at where it was before, because I know that I am once again making a difference and an impact, whether it's with a BT or an aspiring BCBA or for a school or for a client or for a parent, whatever or whichever way I'm providing services.
Absolutely. You know, and you mentioned going back to your passion. And I feel like that when you find your passion and you understand your why, that's where everything sort of clicks again, or it might click for the first time. And so, you know, when you're bouncing, you know, from company to company, it might not be because you're burnt out necessarily. It might just be because you want more exposure. But at the same time, there might be some internal burnout that you're feeling, you know? So I'm curious to know kind of like on what you've seen or what you've experienced. Would you mind discussing the issue of burnout amongst behavior analysts and how it relates, how it can relate to the quality of supervision for BTs and anybody who's going for their BCBA credential?
Yeah. So burnout could just be like you're not there for when people need you to be, right? I feel like a lot of the times when I was burned out, I wasn't providing quality to like the supervision time that I was there. Like sometimes I felt like I was more on my computer than I was present in the session. Sometimes I didn't even feel like going to the sessions and overlapping, right? Like it's just different. Like I think it hits differently for everyone, but at the end of the day, it came down to like, I don't want to go to work. Like I just don't want to go to work. And it having that mentality of like not wanting to go to work doesn't give you the opportunity to provide what's best sometimes for like the client or your BTs when you're supervising, right? And so I try my best to like put those, emotions aside, because obviously like you want to put those emotions aside as soon as you go into the client's home. But that sometimes can be really hard and can be distracting at times too. So, but I just felt like, you know, for me at that time, like when I was burned out, like I just was like, I'm probably not meeting my billables right now. I'm probably not completing my session notes on time, for example. Like I was not my best, right? I wasn't my best, and I knew that I wasn't my best. And I fell to the point where I felt like it was unethical, where I was kind of struggling to try to come back up in some way, trying to make changes. Like, do I need to take a leave of absence? Do I need to change companies to feel better? Like what kind of changes did I have to like make in order for me to like be back where I need to be, right? And being passionate about the field and liking what I do, like being excited for what I was doing, you know? So that's basically what, like, at least for me, what burned out kind of felt like for me. But it might be different for everyone too.
Yeah, I mean, burnout definitely, you know, looks different. It comes in all different shapes and sizes. It comes in different behaviors. And, you know, I know that, like, on my end, when it comes to burnout, and I don't know if you might agree with this or if you've experienced this necessarily, but on my end, it's just been, like, lack of autonomy and more on my end because of the fact that, you know, I'm autistic. There's certain things that I need for myself, you know, yeah. Like give me written out examples, give me, you know, task analyses, give me something that I can refer to rather than just kind of like say it in my ear. Cause I'll listen to you, but then it goes in one ear and completely out the other. Respectfully, yeah. I don't remember. I'm not an auditory learner, you know, so I can't remember it all. So I guess like from everyone's end, from my end, like it's definitely a combination of those things. But I've definitely seen it where, like, it might have to do with, like, the company's practices, or it might have to do with the company, something with the company in general that sort of attributes. Is that kind of the experience you've had as well?
Yeah, I feel like at the end of the day, like, the culture of the company is what's going to make a difference, right? Like, the way that it... like the values of that company, right? Because one thing is saying what the values are of the company. Another thing is actually applying those values within the company. And I feel like I've seen that a lot where they're like, oh yeah, like these are our values. And then I'm like, okay. I'm like, I don't see it as much, right? Or maybe I'm missing it, you know? Like, so it was a lot of that where I felt like a lot of the times, like the values weren't matching with mine, even though if I felt like they would. And so I like that kind of led to like burnout as well, you know?
And, you know, it's interesting too, because burnout really can lead to lower quality supervision. And so, you know, from someone's perspective who has bounced between multiple companies, what would you say your advice is for companies that you have been to, companies you've left, or even just like any company owner in general who's listening to this episode?
I would say really listen out to your clinicians. I feel like a lot of the times we put a lot of focus into BT retention, which I don't get me wrong, that's an important factor. But I think a lot of the times our clinicians get lost in the way. And there's not a lot of support sometimes. Even though we have these monthly clinical meetings and things like that, maybe that's not enough for everyone, you know, for me, I'm a very person, I need to talk to you kind of a thing. I'm more of a, let's talk together, let's collaborate, let's do this. Because in this field, it can feel very isolated. And I feel like if we can focus on our clinicians, and how they provide that supervision by, you know, getting all of the BCBAs together and collaborating and building a community and building a group of a supportive group between one another. I feel like that just would make such a big difference with any company, honestly. And I feel like that's always been a lack just in general in our field, because I swear, I could talk to every BCBA and they will tell me I feel isolated. I don't really talk to any other BCBA. I barely see any other BCBA. I usually only see my BTs. And I'm I get it. I was there too, you know, it's a bummer. You could definitely feel isolated in this field. And so I feel like something that I can recommend for any company listening, or, you know, any company that's building up, really focus in your clinicians and, you know, help them build a community where they feel comfortable to communicate with other BCBAs, collaborate with other BCBAs, right? I feel like that just makes a big difference in general.
It really does, because, and I'm coming from the perspective of having a really great clinical team. You know, I've been lucky enough to be at a company where I can reach out to a BCBA, or even some of my technicians who have certain skills that even I'm still picking up on. You know, I've been lucky in that regard, but then at the same time, I've definitely heard about, and I've been through that isolating process too. I've been the one who has felt like they've been on lonely island. And I think some of that just comes from, you know, there, when I say there, I mean my supervisor's supervision. You know, this was how they were treated when they were supervised. And so I can definitely understand, in terms of the lonely island, I sort of feel and tell me what your thoughts are, but I kind of feel like there's this cycle where it's okay, you know, I was supervised by this supervisor and they made me feel on lonely island, and this is what I learned, and now I'm going to pass it down to you, basically. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I've definitely noticed that.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I say exposure is so important, right? Because you might have learned that from one supervisor, but you might have learned another way from another supervisor, you know? But yes, I completely agree. Whatever you learn, right? It comes to be part of you as a clinician at the end of the day in some way, because that's the supervision you are receiving.
Yeah. I feel like nobody should be on lonely island, but also nobody should just have one supervisor that they only go to, just because it's as much as I love my BCBA candidates that I've worked with, that I've really fostered a lot of care. And same thing for past candidates or past and even future people. I don't want to be the only one. I want there to be a variety of supervisors that have come in contact, because there's so many things that each of us clinicians have experience with. And at the same time, my experience is different from your experience, Rossi. And, you know, even some of the behavior analysts that I've worked with, just because I've had my credential for 8 years doesn't mean that my experience is better. I say this in quotations and no one can see me do this, but better than anybody else. Yes. You know?
Yes. Yes. No, I definitely agree on that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go ahead and jump into our first code word of the day, which is the topic we have been talking about all podcasts so far, and that is supervision. That is SUPERVISION. That is supervision. So now let's talk a little bit about aspiring BCBAs, and we talked a little bit about burnout. And so what advice would you give to aspiring BCBAs, aspiring BCABAs to maintain their passion and dedication to this field while also trying to prevent themselves from having burnout?
I would say definitely have a positive, open communication with your director. And also just kind of make sure you advocate for yourself too. I feel like a lot of the times we're trained to just comply, which I think is a big issue in our fields in general. But I feel like we as clinicians, we're also trained to just comply with this. Get these billables, get these numbers in, and not so much in the other side of things, which is the clinical side of things, right? And so, like, the best advice that I would say is like have that open communication, build that rapport with your, company directors, your top people, right? And advocate for yourself. Don't be afraid to like advocate for what it is that you need or what it is that is lacking, so that we can have more of a supportive field or whatever it is in that area.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely attest to that as well. One of our philosophical one of the gosh, I'm like drawing a blank. One of the things in ABA is to practice philosophical doubt.
Yes.
And it's okay to it's okay to practice that. I actually it's kind of a funny story, but kind of also a sad story. But when I was at a company, in an orientation that I was in, I was actually hearing from their trainer to a group of BTs, do not question your BCBA and what they do. Do not question your supervisor. Listeners, I wish you could see Jessica right now
Oh
because her face like is literally like mine right now when it comes to, I mean, I think that's what it should be. That's how you learn.
we're there to learn. Like, we should be asking these questions. And you know what? Like, that's something that I'm actually training my supervisees at the moment. And so, any supervisee out there, any aspiring BCBA, please, 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 like, it's not wrong to ask a question. I know it might feel like you're putting your BCBA on the spot, but that's why they're there for. That's why they're providing you these hours, right? Like, this is your time to ask these questions because if you don't ask them, you're not going to learn anything. And it's better for you to ask them. Like, yeah, you might put them on the spot. Like, if I'm put on the spot, I'm like, you know what? That's a great question. Let me get back to you. It's as easy as that, So any BCBA that you have some supervisees, like encourage them to ask you questions, right? Like during supervision time, like no question is dumb, right? Like no question is dumb. And I'd rather them ask me a question. I'd rather have that open communication of like, ask me a question than you trying to figure it out yourself. And not only that, but not gaining the like that experience of asking and having that open communication with me. I'd rather you ask me than you trying to do something and it being completely wrong, So, and not only that too, but like kind of like you said, right? Like we don't know everything. So if there's something that you're like, that doesn't seem very right, like, hey, you know what? Like I'm reading this article right now on Ascent, right? And I know we're doing compliance right now. Like, should we be like, honoring their assent sometimes or all the time. Like, what does that look like? Right? Like, ask those questions. Like, don't be afraid to ask those questions because at the end of the day, you might just teach your BCBA something and that's okay. Like, this field is all about learning and it's all about like receiving that constructive feedback in a positive way, no matter from who it is, at the end of the
Amen. Amen.
day.
Yes, I literally feel that, and it's so funny. Like one of the things that like I try to do is I have meetings every single week with my technicians to kind of like check in, see where they're at, see how they feel about, you know, their client, go over data, but also too, like, just like a mental check-in. And, you know, they know that they can reach out to me at any time, but then it's like, you know, you don't always think about it. And then you can't always say something during supervision because we have to honor client dignity. But it's one of those things where it's like, I love being asked questions because you're helping me grow my behavior analytics skills. And I think sometimes people forget that.
Yes. I have to, like, honestly, like, any BCBA out there listening too, like, be humble, like, encourage your supervisors, that your supervisees, to ask those questions, right? Like, and be, not only that, but be open to a different perspective as well. I feel like a lot of the times we're just like, this is the way I was trained, this is the way it is, and this is the way it should be. And it's like, no, there's so much out there. There's so many different ways of doing it. And I feel like a lot of times, like, I've seen BCBAs where they're just stuck on that and they're not open to, like, listening to other things, you know? And it's just like, be open to it. Like, I know it might be a little scary. Like, I know it's different, but be open to it. It'll make you a better clinician at the end of the day. So.
Absolutely. And I mean, one thing that I also try to, like, reiterate to my supervisees is, you guys are out there way more than I am. Like, yeah. I'm there for you guys. You know, if I'm doing, like, a supervision, I might be there a couple hours a week. You're there every single day. You're there with my kid almost every single day. And, you know, you see them more than I do. So,
yeah.
Even
I literally say, like, you're my eyes and ears. Like, if there's something that you feel is off, like, let's collaborate together. I always like to take a collaborative approach with my BTs or RBTs or aspiring BCBAs, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are seeing the client the most. And I'm going to learn what way do we need to shift? What way do we need to modify? What is it that we need to change so that we do best for our client? And a lot of times I feel like we're just stuck in, like, no, this is a target, and this is a target that they need to, you know, master, right? And it's like, you can always change that target. You can always modify. You can always, like, make a difference in the way that you're implementing these programs, right? Like, there isn't, like, just one way. And I feel like sometimes we're just stuck on that one way. And, like, something that I can really, like, just kind of put out there is something that I've learned throughout my journey is just be open to something different.
Yeah. I feel like no matter how many companies you go to, that's going to be a lesson that sort of just sticks.
Yeah.
Cause, yeah. I mean, that definitely resonates, you know? Absolutely. And you mentioned too, not everything works the same exact way. ABA is not meant to be cookie cutter. It's an individualized based treatment. But it's not just evidence-based, it's individualized, and we have to be collaborative, not just with other, you know, supervisors or not just other, like, teachers and other providers and stuff, but with our technicians, since they are out there, you know, our clients sometimes have reactivity. And I think that sometimes, you know, we forget that too. And there's much of the, I'm the BCBA, so I know it all, and this is how we're gonna do it, whether you like it or not. And it's like,
absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. And I always, like, in my sessions, at least, like, during supervision time, like, I always ask them, like, okay, like, how is our client doing? Like, what is it that you see? What are some strengths, right? Like, what is it that we can change so that whatever strengths the client has, right, we can modify that to, so that it's, you know, they're more successful, it's more feasible at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I feel like when we focus from, like, a strengths-based area, we get more success rather than,
yes,
we're gonna do this like the VB map tells us to do it.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yes. That's all I'm gonna say to that. It was like,
I that's something that I've always tried to teach my supervisees. I'm like, use the assessments as tools. It shouldn't be your default, right? Like that shouldn't be your default of like, this is a goal and this is a goal for Johnny and Katie and Rosie. Like, no, like that's not the way it works, right? Like use it as a tool to help you guide you as to what areas we need to like work with our, you know, clients. And then from there, individualize that goal. Like you said, right? Like making sure like we're understanding their strengths, right? So that way we're individualizing that goal to be more towards their strengths and helping them expand those skills at the end of the day. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Because, you know, at the end of the day too, you know, it's about working on goals that are socially significant to the client, not what's socially significant to the assessment tool that we're using.
Yes. You know? Exactly.
Oh my goodness. You know, and what's also so interesting too, so you mentioned assessments being a tool. That's something that I teach every time. Like just because I like this goal from the socially savvy, for example, I like to use the socially savvy sometimes, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm going to write it verbatim as is, you know, because I don't want it to be like that. I might like the skill as it's written, but I'm going to reverse that a little bit and I'm going to make it their own goal. And I think that, you know, when it comes to teaching that, you know, it's really important to be able to understand, hey, you know, our clients are also different from each other. Let's actually really try to make it a little bit more individual. We can still make it insurance compliant. You know, there's a way to do that. But let's also get back to the heart of ABA, which is individualization.
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
So kind of on the topic of supervision, what was the most valuable lesson you learned from your supervision, you feel? And what is something that you wish you would have learned during your supervision?
Ooh, great question. I think something that I value a lot is the communication. That's something that I'm always going to take with me, and something that I value a lot and something that I want to continue to share with any supervisee that I have or any mentor. Any mentee that I work with, communicate, right? Communication is such a big, important key in our field. It goes into like that collaboration approach, right? Like communicating with other service providers out there, collaborating with your team, collaborating with other BTs, RBTs, collaborating with other supervisors, right? Like that communication piece of like communicating and collaborating, like, that's the biggest thing that I'm always going to take from my supervision. And if there was something that I can take and kind of go back and redo it, it would be to like know how important communication, how important that communication piece is, so that I could have like probably exposed myself even quicker than the way that I did it in my journey. But and not only that, but also like communication leads you into networking too, right? So like networking with other people, right? Like, I don't know. I think communication is just a big one in general. And I wish that I could have taken that knowledge back then of like, hey, if you communicate with this person, you're at the same time networking with this person and they're going to know you for like the rest of the years that you work in this field, right? And so it's just something that I wish I would have known from the very beginning.
You know, and I really appreciate that you said communication, because even though it's such a broad, like general topic, it can actually be placed on a bit of a micro level. Communication with other providers, communication during family trainings, communication during supervision. You know, there's different methods to communication, and it's not one way or the other. You know, it's everything is very different. And so I feel like that's something that completely, I mean, I hope it resonates with our listeners, but it definitely resonates with me, you know?
Yeah. And not only that, but like knowing how to communicate too is like a big thing too. Like, I feel like a lot of people are always telling me like, yeah, communicate. But like, how do you even do that too is like a very like distinct way, right? Like applying that, like, how do I approach that person, right? Or like, how do I build that communication between my supervisor, for example, right? Like, how do I have that open communication to the point where I'm comfortable like asking questions, right? Like, it's such a big, like, I know it's like you said, very broad, but at the end of the day, like, it goes into these other little things that just makes a big difference. Yeah.
It does too. And even like, I'm thinking about like when it comes to communicating about specific like concerns or conflicts, you know, there's a way to even like deal with that. That is something that I wish I would have known during my supervision.
Oh yeah. Same.
Like, how would I even begin to talk about this concern about, you know, the client that I'm seeing? You know, there have been times where I've been pulled into the office and have been told, hey, you probably shouldn't have said that to a family member. And it wasn't like anything extreme, but it's like, you know, it was extreme enough for a parent to be like, hey, this made me feel a little uncomfortable, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, that's why like communication, even though it is so broad, at the same time, it can be like put down in different like areas. It's very like, it can be different and also individualized and also small in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree about like the whole conflicts and how to approach that. Like, that's something that I'm still learning as a BCBA today. Like, I feel like there's certain situations that I was put on the spot, right? Like certain conflicts, certain things where I was like, I feel like that's very unethical and I want to speak up about it, right? But like, how to even approach that like in a positive way too. So yeah, definitely still something, like, I think communication in general is something that you're just going to continue to learn how to communicate with just different people, especially in this field, because there's so like, it's a diverse group of people. So yeah.
Would you say that's also, just out of curiosity, would you say it's also been your hardest lesson that you've had to learn too? Or would you say there's something else that's a little bit harder than that?
No, it's definitely also been my hardest lesson to learn. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's something I'm still kind of trying to learn and, you know, get better at.
I feel like, you know, it you can never truly master communication the way that like we might write a communication goal for a client, right? Like, we might say, oh, you know, Johnny will independently request for an item using one vocal word or whatever per request. But being able to communicate under a variety of conditions, variety of circumstances, and even like communicating about conflicts, communicating about difficult conversations, even, that is that's a hard thing for anybody, whether you are neurodivergent like myself or neurotypical, you know, that's a hard thing to be able to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Even, yeah, like for anyone.
yeah, it's kind of amazing. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it just kind of goes to show you, like, you never really stop learning.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, like something that I just kind of keep all the time is be humble. Like, no matter who I talk to, no matter who I'm, you know, supervising, or, you know, who my BTs are or RBTs or whatever it is, at the end of the day, like, I try my best to stay humble, because I know that I don't know everything. And even though I'm a BCBA, even though I have those four letters, it doesn't make me more than another person. So.
Exactly. Humility and just being open to other perspectives, you know, I feel like it's such a powerful lesson to learn, just because, you know, again, it's one thing to have really great mentorship and really great supervision from one person, but you're only getting it from one person. That's the difference. And like you said earlier, you know, you mentioned how someone was like in a box, basically.
Yeah.
Being only supervised by one person, only having one person that they had. And that can be very isolating, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I love that I've gotten to supervise so many people. But at the same time, on my end, like, I do encourage to seek out, you know, additional resources, seek out additional supervision, talk to other people. Cause, you know, yeah. my perspective, as you know, like, our perspectives are very different from each other. And so it's really important to be able to pick up on that. And
yeah.
I guess understand that, you know?
No, absolutely. That's something that I always try to encourage as much as I can myself. And something that I really hope that in the future it could be a little bit more bigger is I want to create like a network community where like people can like talk to each other, collaborate about anything, and, you know, help each other out in different situations that we might find ourselves in, and be able to share our experiences with others. That's something that's big. And I feel like if, you know, in a company, if that's something that can be provided, right? Like that space, that time, right? Because time is such a big like thing in our field, unfortunately. Like, I feel like sometimes they're back to back with sessions and meetings, and we forget to make time, right? To like have that space to like really discuss certain things and like experiences and sharing and all those things. So like going back to that, like, it's just, it does make a difference. So
it really, really, really does. I completely agree. And let's go ahead and talk about our second code word of the podcast episode. That second code word is something else we've been talking about, and that is quality. That is Q-U-A-L-I-T-Y. That is quality. Now, a few more questions. What would you say are some qualities you believe that are very essential in supervisors and even just aspiring supervisors to ensure the future success of aspiring BCBAs? What would you say those look like?
I would say there's three. And I would go with, well, my business name is Impacting Kids, and the P, A, and C are capitalized for a reason. And I'm going to go with that. So PAC is P for the possibility. There's endless possibilities of anything, endless possibility of gaining knowledge, endless possibilities of us implementing certain programs, endless possibilities of our clients making progress, endless possibilities of insights and perspective and all that good jazz. A for being authentic with whatever it is that you're going to put yourself to. Just be authentic with yourself, with the other people that you're providing services to. Just, you know, have that authenticity, you know. And C for communication. Like, we've been talking about a lot of communication, and it's something that's just so important. And I kind of intertwine it with collaboration together, like those two together, just, that's something that those are the three things that I value the most, and that I hope that I can contribute and expose other people to, like, you know, have that within them as well. So, yeah.
I love that. I love that those are your three values, and, you know, kind of like listening to that too, it's like, yeah, you know, I can definitely relate to this. I love hearing that those are your top three. And yeah, for me, like, it does resonate. It does definitely resonate with me.
Yay. I hope it resonates with other people too. So
yes, absolutely. I hope that it resonates with each of our listeners, you know, because again, like, that is really, that's the heart of what we do, you know?
Yeah.
So, and how can current BCBAs contribute to shaping a positive and supportive environment for the next generation of, you know, BCBA candidates, aspiring BCBAs or BCABAs?
I think don't forget that at the end of the day, we were in their positions as well. I feel like a lot of the times we forget, right, the where we came from. And it was a difficult journey. And I feel like I'm always looking back, like I try my best not to forget that because it was tough. It was tough when I did a transition from being, you know, regular BT to an advanced RBT. It was tough when I went from an advanced RBT to being a mid-tier supervisor. Like, it was tough from being a mid-tier supervisor to becoming a BCBA. So if anything, like, to shape in any way or form, like, just resonate, right? Like, with your BTs, with your aspiring BCBAs, like, put yourself in their shoes, right? Like, be compassionate, like, be, have empathy, right? Like, right. Understand where they're coming from and, like, how you can provide that support, how you can encourage them, how you can aspire them, like, inspire them to become more, inspire them to continue on this journey, because it is a tough journey. Like, I get it, you know, it is, and it's tough. And I like to always, like, share some of those experiences with, like, my BTs or supervisees or aspiring BCBAs so that they know, like, you're not alone. Like, I was in that position myself not too long ago. So,
I appreciate that so much. And especially because, you know, when you go back to your roots, you do kind of think about, like, oh my God, I was just there. Like, you know, so this long ago, you know, I know what it's like to be in your shoes, but also too, it sort of like gives yourself the reminder of you've been there, you understand, and it's okay to know what that's like. You know, like you said earlier, Rossi, you know, just because you have 4 or 5 letters after your name doesn't make you better than anybody else. It just means you got a credential, you pass a test at the end of
exactly.
Oh. Well, thank you so much for joining the podcast tonight. I'm so happy that we got to talk about this. This is a subject that I get very excited and very passionate about. And so I'm really happy that we got to share this conversation this evening.
Yes, me too. I'm super passionate about, you know, supervision in general. And, you know, I hope like any information that we shared today, it was in some way helpful to other people listening out there. And it just makes, you know, an overall big difference and impact in our field.
I agree with that. And where can our listeners find you?
Great question. So my business name is called Impacting Kids. So I do have a stand store where if you want to book like a free consultation with me, you can. And we can talk all things about supervision, ABA, field work, all that great jazz. If they go Impacting Kids on Instagram and onto my stand store, you guys have found me.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, thank you again, Rossi. And thank you to everyone who tuned in. I've been your host, Michelle Zeman, and I'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.